Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have by phone Haley and Michael DiMarco. Welcome, you guys.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Very fun. I was just talking to you before we actually started taping about having read Dateable back in the day. I think I was wandering through a Christian bookstore and picked it up saying, what in the world is this? And I was in my 20s and just assumed, of course, that I was going to get married because that's what happens to 20-somethings, doesn't it? And I'm now in my 30s and still single. But I read the book and just laughed because there was so much wisdom in there. And I love your... Well, at that time it was just you, Haley, writing with Justin Lukadu,
yeah.
But just kind of the shoot from the hip, kind of tell it like it is, which is an approach mm-hmm. that I love and very helpful for those of us out there navigating the dating and into the marriage scene. So
good.
You two are married. You have written this book together. It is called Cupidity, mm-hmm. 50 Stupid Things People Do for Love. How's the response to the book been so far? Because I know this came out couple months ago now, right? Or a month ago? Or
it's been out not quite a year, I think.
Oh, okay. Let me restate that.
We get a little dizzy with how many books we write, but the response has been good in the sense of people saying, oh, thank goodness there's other people just as stupid as me out there.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I'm sure that around Valentine's Day, everyone is, you know, they kind of do a soul check and decide, you know, okay, where am I? What do I need to do? Where do I need to go from here?
Right.
So, okay, well, somehow you two made it to marriage. So, did you write the...
Tell you what.
did you write this book out of your own collective experiences or yeah. how did that come about?
Yeah, well, we didn't marry until we were 37.
Okay.
And so we had, what do we say? We have probably about 40 years of dating desperation. So yes, we've pretty much done everything you should do wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we know of which we speak. We've been there and we know exactly how it feels and what everybody's going through. So hopefully we can share a little bit of that today.
That is good. Okay. So I want to start off by asking you guys then what actually causes what you're referring to as cupidity, basically stupid things that people do for love. This can happen whether you're single or whether you're married. But I want to know why, because my mom is from an older generation. She was older when she had me. And so she throws up her hands when she discusses my dating life and my situation. And basically, she looks at me like, why cannot we all just jump into a carriage like Laura and Almanzo on Little House on the Prairie, ride across the prairie, somehow end up homesteading together and just making it happen? Why is there all this drama and craziness?
Well, probably technology, population centers growing, and just overall education. You know, we don't call each other... Haley never called me manly or whatever
well,
that was.
That was our first mistake. That was our first mistake right there.
Yeah, not as my proper name, at least.
Right.
No, I think it's because, the one thing that singles, especially into their 30s, get a lot, especially ones that profess that they want to get married, is, you're too picky. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're just too picky. And really what it comes down to is, just like anything else, we get into muscle memory. We get into habits that we pick up either that are modeled for us or we just pick up naturally because no one told us that prevent us from, you know, seeing people for who they really are. So we make terrible mistakes by dating people that we shouldn't. Or we make terrible mistakes because we didn't date the people that we should have. It all comes down to focusing on the wrong things versus the right things, and having a healthy look at what love is. I mean, we have done stupid over and over again in love, and we still do it in marriage, and that's kind of what the impetus for the book was.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that, Haley?
Well, I could talk about the stupid for quite some time, but no, I think it comes down to cupidity happens when we misunderstand what love is, and we have this kind of, I think a lot of us have this kind of weird idea. Everyone kind of defines love in our own way,
mm-hmm.
and that can get you, how you define love is either going to get you in trouble or get you out of it. So that's really the the crux of the matter.
Yeah. Instead of looking really at a biblical definition of love, right, and moving towards marriage in a biblical fashion. And
right.
Yeah, I think we've kind of thrown that out the window and really taken, I always tell people, I mean, obviously the dating practices of the world have infiltrated the church big time, because I have friends that are languishing in 7-year relationships that are going nowhere. And it's just, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And it's like, who's telling these people? Like, what is up?
Right.
Because whatever.
I was just saying, one of those biggest areas, I think, especially if we're talking about just women, I'll try and then on the women's side, is there's guys too that this probably affects as well, but the idea is that romance equals love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this notion that, oh, if he makes me feel this certain way, or he does everything just right, then it must be love, or if he doesn't, then forget him. And so we have this view that we really get from culture. We get it from our chick flicks and from romance novels, from the music we listen to, that it should be all this perfect, great feeling. And of course, biblically, love doesn't only have to do with feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with action. Or, you know, God couldn't have commanded us to love our enemies, and that certainly doesn't feel good. So this notion that love is a feeling, that love is all about how you feel romantically, can really get women, especially, off track.
And marriage, biblically, you know, marriage involves goats more than it does romance in the Bible. So, you know, as far as, you know, the transactional relationship that we, you know, look at love as, we really do, we monetize it differently than it was in the Bible. We monetize it with how it makes us feel, and our hopes and our aspirations and our dreams, and really less about who can we marry that can help us best glorify God.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's really a countercultural question to ask.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. And I think it's interesting because, you know, you actually, and I want to kind of segue into this, Haley, you show the example, because I think a lot of women can go to the other extreme, and then just out of desperation or out of whatever, it's just like, is there anyone here who will love me? And I know you shared the illustration of a couple guys that you dated who you really felt like they were the only, I think you referred to them as the only good guys who would love you. And kind of that that idea of the desperation to make something work, and that surely if you just do this and pull this string and whatever, you can kind of make this thing happen. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, early on, you know, I didn't really become a believer of any understanding, at least. I was kind of a late bloomer. I'm 27 when I first started to have any idea of who God was. And so as soon as I hit that moment in time, I was like, wow, there's really nice guys in the world. And so I was amazed that there was some nice guys. So the first one I dated, I thought, well, this has got to be it, because, well, he's a nice, you know, he's not a jerk like the rest of them were. And so, yeah, I tried, obviously that one didn't work, tried the next one, that didn't work. So I tried quite a few, but I stayed, particularly in one, I remember staying in one relationship for 6 years thinking, well, I'm never going to find another good guy. And I'm not really interested in this guy, but at least it's somebody. So, yeah, I understand that kind of desperation. I hate to say it, but that desperation of I've got to make this work, because there's not going to be another one that comes along.
Right.
And that just damaged both of us. That was really crazy thinking. And what it does is it essentially says, well, I've got to somehow help God, because He's not going to bring me the right person that He, you know, is designed for me. But yeah, I'll just make this one work.
Right.
So, yeah, that can be dangerous.
Well, and you think that you should be able to, you know, on some level, make something work with a quote-unquote good guy, or especially a Christian guy, if, you know, you're both communicating on the same level and have the same goals and whatever. So I think that can be confusing, especially for women who say, wow, you know, he's a quality guy. Why is it not working out for me? And then we can kind of get a little bit, that's where some of the drama maybe kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Michael, talk a little bit, too. I want to talk about a couple of the specific challenges for men and women. And I know for men, it's the issue you guys talk in the book about provision and this understanding or misunderstanding, I guess, of what actual provision is. This is pretty interesting for us right now, because Martha on our team recently wrote a blog post about the phenomenon of independent women scaring men, and kind of that stereotype of the women out there, kind of the Sex and the City stereotype, that we're all out there just making six figures and shopping for shoes and being all crazy and hating men, when, you know, the Christian women I talk to are like, I'm not like that at all. And then the guys, you know, are kind of like, well, what role do I have? Am I just an accessory? And that's kind of what they assume. So what really is the role of provision in modern dating, and how do men communicate that well, and what do they really need and want in that?
Well, since Haley was a successful career woman when we met and first started dating, since she owned her own house, since she had signed her first publishing book contract. That was a really real issue for me when meeting her, and really provision. It goes deeper, as you said, and far beyond the financial,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the things that Haley did in kind of providing even the financial and the security side of things, they were really done out of fear. And she can probably talk better about this, but when I kind of dug into kind of her mindset behind why she bought a can of green beans every time she went to the store, even if she already had like four in her cupboard,
uh-huh.
It was because she didn't want to run out. What if the power went out? What if she didn't have? And so a lot of, for her, this independence and self-providing that she had achieved was necessary for a modern woman living without a man in her life. And so what I was able to provide was I was able to provide relief. I was able to provide security. Yes, I know you have an alarm system on your house. I get that. But I can also, you know, wield a baseball bat pretty good, and it does more damage than a piercing siren,
mm-hmm.
You know. And so the other thing that we talk about in the book, that maybe this is the direction you were hoping I would go, is the emotional provision that a woman needs in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
where it's not just about money, it's not just about things and stuff, but it's about providing emotional security and safety and someone that she can, in her job, she might feel like she has to be the strong one, and she can come home and she doesn't have to be the strong one anymore.
Well, and for me, it was a lot about stability, because I was emotionally pretty, like, dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I could go, you know, from one side of the pendulum to the other, and that was, it was wearing on my life. And so to have a male perspective, to have someone who said, wait a minute, life, this drama doesn't have to happen. Mm-hmm. Let's center ourselves on God's word and get out of your emotional life. I think that's a lot of the provision that a man can provide now, where you have these women that don't necessarily need finances. They don't need what women used to need. But like Michael said, we still need the provision of a man in our lives. There is something to be said about having someone that isn't afraid to confront you on your sin,
mm-hmm.
that isn't afraid to lift you up out of the muck and the mire of, you know, eating a quart of ice cream when you come home because you're so depressed. It's great to have that, and I think that's a significant part of the provision that a man provides,
yeah.
gives to a woman.
The ice cream analogy is not just a stereotypical thing for Haley. She
owns that.
And so,
yeah.
You know, she's not reaching for stereotypes.
No.
She had the two cats. She had the ice cream stock.
I had all the stereotypes.
Wait, did you have the precious moments figurines? Because that's my other one.
Oh, no, I didn't go that far.
Okay, that's good. Well, see, that's why you eventually got to marriage. This is why. There's a formula to it. There's a formula. So, Haley, I was going to ask, did he have to step in then and convince you of this, of his ability to provide,
goodness.
And that he was necessary, or were you just like, bring it on, praise the Lord, someone finally came into my life?
No. I mean, okay. I think we're all about confession. We're very transparent, and for us, it was a little difficult coming together. For the first year, it was both of us trying to learn. I mean, when you've been single for 37 years,
mm-hmm.
and you suddenly have to live with another person in your house, there's a lot of learning to be done. And for us, there was just, especially for me being a confident, successful woman, it was like, what? Now I have a, what role do you play? And so, no, it wasn't easy. It took a long time to figure out what roles each of us would play, and we had to work through that for at least a good year, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
you say?
Oh, yeah. A good year and probably 2 dozen broken plates. And,
yeah, you know. I like to throw plates. But that was
wow.
that's another story.
Okay, that's good.
But not at him.
No.
I had a specific place I would do that.
Okay.
Go ahead, anyway.
That's good. Those are good coping mechanisms. It's good to know that those are available.
Yeah.
As long as you go thrift store shopping to buy,
right,
you know, surplus ones.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, and then just quickly before we leave the subject of provision, Michael, then you speak. So yep. Did you feel like you had to go in and move in and bust something on her, or were you kind of like intimidated by her on the front end?
That was one of the, I think that's where the most friction came from in the first year, especially of our marriage, was just me kind of wrapping my head around it, because, you know, we're trained to be nice guys. We're trained to be, Yeah, I'm talking about, especially in the Christian faith, we're trained to be, you know, servant leaders, we're trained to be all these things, and when faced with a strong, independent, modern woman, it's daunting. It really is. And so so I would constantly fight feeling the need to say, to not verbally or physically, but kind of spiritually slap her around and say, look, that, you know, you need to release this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You need to let go of the worry. You need to let go of the stress and the fear, and let me provide some of this comfort, some of this stability, some of the finances. Mm-hmm. And you need to let go of it. And so it was really a time for me to kind of find my right voice, because I screwed up a ton as far as not saying thing, not approaching it the right way, doing it gentle but firm, and having the confidence to do it. I think that's the biggest thing that guys need, is confidence that even if they're going to screw up, that they can own it and say, I'm sorry, I'm leading, I'm going to fail, I'm going to trip, but I'm going to continue to lead.
Right, but women, here, I also want to add this, because this is one of our acts of cupidity, is taking charge. Mm-hmm. Muscle for women. A lot of women, we're just used to taking charge, especially if you've been single a long time. And so when it happens, like it did with Michael and I have this natural bent that I just take charge. I know what we should do when we should do it. And if women aren't willing to let that go, mm-hmm. to not just be the independent, I run my life and I'm going to do it. It's a lot easier to make it through that initial, you know, year or two, however long it takes. But that's an important one to learn in the dating time, when you're dating. For girls, that's practice not taking charge, like where we're going to go, where we're going to sit when we go there, any number of things where we're the boss. That can become, well, it's hard to marry somebody. I know that from experience, when you're the boss all the time. But then once you marry them, it's even harder.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were a ton of things here that totally intrigued me. I mean, you guys talk about, especially women, a woman's act of cupidity, loving who you want him to become instead of who he mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. Bless his heart. It's just like, yeah, I mean, that's so true. I know you talk a good deal about obsession, whether about the person or about yourself. What do you think? I mean, you know that you're talking here to singles who are anywhere from like college through their 30s. Some have protracted their singleness. Some are wondering why they're still single. What would you say, just as you reflect on the content of the book, are the biggest things that we need to know as far as mistakes that singles make? Let's talk about some of those.
I think there's a few things. I think that the one I said earlier, taking charge, is a big one. But telling him everything can be another really dangerous road to go down. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy, because we bond by talking. That's how we feel like we've connected to someone. So I understand mm-hmm. that. But when you go out on a date with someone and you tell him everything about, you know, when you started your period and how your cats are doing and how they look so much like each other and how cute they are when they play and what your mom said today. We can just go on and let him know everything about our lives, and we feel like we're connecting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like a guy really needs a drink of water. Water is really good for you, and you need it to live. But make him drink a swimming pool, and that you're like, you're going to drown him.
Yeah.
So telling a man everything is heading in the wrong direction, and you're going to find that dates just don't seem to go anywhere. Mm. So I think that's a big one, and they both kind of have to do with the taking charge, and the telling him everything have to do with kind of taking our lives into our own hands. And we think, if I tell him everything, if I tell him what to do, I can make this life what I want it to be.
Yeah.
And that ultimately is not us letting go and trusting God with not only our everyday walking around life, but with our love life.
Yeah, I think that's especially true when you're going through a rough patch, for example, to mm-hmm. just literally like dump on him every detail of like a drama with a girlfriend or, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just overwhelming. That would, that makes me crazy thinking about
right.
it. Okay, what's one you have to throw up, Michael?
Boy. Well, since Haley's concentrating on the women so much, I'll join in. No, I'm kidding. I'll give one for the.
Hey,
I'll give
one for, be fair. Be fair.
You know, for me, and I'm a reformed or recovering nice guy, which Haley at times just even verbally says, "Man, I wish I would have known you before you recovered from your nice guyness." But you know, pleasing people. Pleasing others at all costs mm-hmm. is a big one, I think, for the nice guys out there. Mm. And it goes back to why I had such a hard time. I would have had a worse time if I hadn't have already been in recovery nice recovery the first year of our marriage, but trying to please people at other people at all costs really gets guys into trouble, nice Christian guys, because they're basically making all of their decisions or no decisions at all for fear of upsetting the person they're dating. And so what you end up doing is you end up playing the part of the perfect boyfriend when that's nothing like who you really are day in and day out. And so what can happen is when you're constantly trying to do everything based on the emotions, the whims, and the personal preferences of the person you're dating, and this transfers both ways for both sexes, what you end up doing is you end up giving an unrealistic view of yourself. You're basically trying to create a chick flick sort of situation, and guys end up, nice guys end up in relationships that they really shouldn't have been in the first place, as far as compatibility, as far as likes and dislikes, and they end up doing all these things that they really don't like doing, and then the relationships eventually fall apart. Now, the opposite, the flip side of that is, you know, everything in moderation, right? So the flip side of that is just not doing anything, not doing anything that you don't want to do or you don't like. Well, and then the picky label starts to stick. The selfish label starts to stick. But for most nice guys I meet, that isn't the problem. The problem is that they're getting into these relationships that they should never be in because they're being people that they're really not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think one of the pet peeves for women, I mean, I can only speak for myself, is then when the nice guys find that their strategies aren't working, then they start whining about it and just say that the women only like the bad boys. I'm like, if I have one more guy tell me that, I really will probably fly off the handle.
Well, and see, the thing is that who wouldn't like the bad boy compared to that?
Well,
because at least the bad boy tells you, you know what you're getting with the bad boy in that instance, because they're being who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the nice guy, I mean, Galatians 1:10 talks about, you know, am I here to please man or please God?
Yeah.
So, you know, what pleases God more? A yes man that just does everything that his date asks and is basically just kind of a, you know, a candy striper and a, you know, let me fluff the pillow and get you a magazine and, you know, or does a guy that's passionate about God, passionate about his purpose and path in his life, and, hey, I like you as a female, I like you, I think you're interesting, but your future plans don't match up with what I want to do. I want to travel the world, I want to go on missions trips, you're afraid of flying, I like you, but this isn't going to work. That's much more attractive because you're living to please God and not please man or women, as it might be.
Yeah, that's good. Tell us a little bit about something I thought was really intriguing, where you guys introduce what you call the pyramid of needs. And there are two different pyramids, one for the men and one for the women. Now, if I were a guy, I would not be taking my pyramid and laminating it and putting it up anywhere, because I'm like, whoa, what is this? But I think it's helpful. And I think I want you guys to each talk to those things and what men and women need to know from each of those different illustrations.
Was that shocking to you because you'd never thought of it that way, or you were just shocked that that might be really a guy's pyramid of needs?
It was just that, like, the levels 1, 2, 3, so basically we'll walk through them, you know, the bedrock level there is bedmate, and then helpmate, playmate, and then soulmate. And I'm like, really? Wow, you have to get to level 4 until you get to anything that any, like, you know,
any rational woman would want.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm like, you're not going to pull this card out on any woman too quickly.
Yeah, it's like inverse of what, I mean, there really are inverse. So, the pyramid of needs that we have in the book, and it's the cavewoman and caveman's pyramid of needs. So if they sound kind of rudimentary, elementary, that's because, you know, we're talking about uneducated male, female. So level 1 at the bottom of the pyramid for men is bedmate, a woman who gives warmth and continues my bloodline.
Okay.
Yeah. 2, next level up, helpmate, a woman that cooks the kill and feeds the babies. 3, a playmate, a woman who has tickle fights and plays pin the tail on the mammoth with me. Of course, you know, prehistoric.
Right.
With a literal 7-day creation, we'll throw that in. Okay. And then 4, soulmate, a woman who shares my thoughts and dreams and works with me to invent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of the progression for just the caveman. Haley, do you want to do the cavewoman?
Yes, for the cavewoman, it's shockingly different. Mm-hmm. Her first level is protector. She needs a protector, a man who gives me security from the danger of nature and other cavemen. That's it's essential part in order to survive. And then 2, provider, a man who supplies cave, fur, food, and basic companionship. And then 3 is the enhancer, and that's a man who offers me a chance to nest, to hang animal skins and do some finger painting. And then 4th level is romancer, a man who listens to me and dances with me under the light of the moon.
And our whole thought behind creating these pyramids is, okay, what at the base, at the root of men and women, what is the, like, I've got to have one thing to survive in the wild, what is it? And then from there, steps up. And the reason we did that exercise was to really try and give ourselves and our readers an insight into kind of our primal DNA of what that looks like to the uneducated male or female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think it's good because it does set the different expectations. And I know you kind of nuanced it a little bit as you two are talking in the book about women kind of move from one level to the other and can kind of cast aside the lower level once they get the other one. And men kind of, it's more of a all or nothing kind of thing. So I thought that's kind of interesting, just the different perspectives on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. So, okay, well, this book is a lot of fun. Again, it is Cupidity. We couldn't even touch on everything they talk about here. I mean, literally broken up very well in different sections. There are acts of cupidity that range from the emotional to the mental, the physical, the social, and the spiritual. So you all out there know that you fall under one of those categories, faux show. So make sure that you check it out. Cupidity, 50 Stupid Things People Do for Love. We've been talking to Haley and Michael DeMarco. You can find out more about them and about their books at hungryplanetbooks.com. And then they also blog. You guys were telling me that you guys blog pretty consistently at haleydemarco.com and michaeldemarco.com. So I'm sure we could get some additional insights from y'all as we read your blog posts. So very fun. If you guys, thank you so much for being part of this interview. If you guys make it out to Colorado Springs, you need to stop by and visit us.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be a blast.
And then maybe you could tell Martha and I what our issues are, why we're still single.
We might benefit
from a private session. You could highlight the specific acts of cupidity that maybe we need to work on.
Sounds like fun.
We'll see. So thank you guys very much for your time. Great to meet you during this interview. And like I said, we'll talk in the future, too.